It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this penultimate day of September 2022. Gosh, I love using the word penultimate. It makes me feel all fancy vocabulary and everything. But it is. It's the 29th day of September 2022. September will be done tomorrow on Friday on the front porch. And, now we begin the long, slow slog. Oh, shut up, Robin. Nobody wants to hear your autumnal pissing and moaning, for God's sakes. Leave it be. Okay. Well, I called myself Robin, so that means I'm Robin. So that means, yeah, you know. But in case there's anybody new listening. Of course, if you'd like to enhance your listening experience as we begin this thorn in the side Thursday, well, head on over to headon.live and click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you've never done that before. And pop right in. You'll be greeted by early arrivers Theo and Squeaky and Irish Dave and Anatole. Hey, y'all. You'll also be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become a man cave. And he is capably assisted by his trusty colleague and pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. I think we're going to have a rousing conversation this evening, as ever. We don't have any days when there aren't a lot of things to talk about because, well, it's a big country and there's a lot of stupid people in the big country. And, And on Thorn in the Side Thursday, you know, we deal with stupid people. But I'm getting ahead of myself because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And that this program is no different. And so we say thank you to our 29th day of the month subscribers. And, well, being it's the 29th day of the month, we don't have any subscribers, but we had some extra help come along. Thank you to Andy. Andy out on the road. Andy and I chatted back and forth a little bit on Facebook yesterday. Andy absolutely does not miss a show. And what's more, Andy will not jump ahead. Andy told me he's 3 months behind on the show, which puts him somewhere back in, like, July. And but he likes to keep it in Siri. I'm not talking about the girl inside my phone. I actually said that word, and she didn't say, "Hi, what can all day for you?" I do love it when I'm out, because our wireless, our Verizon wireless internet here is, and this is a complicated technical term, for shit. And so it's like dial-up out there. So I'll say something like, hey, her name, play and any song title. I don't want to run the risk of starting a thing with it right now. And, you know, you'll see the bloop, 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 if you've got an iPhone, you know, the little circle, the little dots on the bottom, and then you'll hear, whacking on that. A little bit of silence here. Still whacking. And I've gotten to where I've almost got it timed out so I can say it with her. Something went wrong. Please try again. It's less infuriating when it happens with that accent. Well, that's never mind. But the whole point is, Andy's still catching up from July. But Andy jumped in yesterday evening after the program, and our buddy David, beginning law school. Now, I guess we'll just call you David 1L, okay? So proud of you. Jumped in as well. And also yesterday evening, an anonymous benefactor jumped in so that the fundraising goal isn't nearly as it isn't quite as awful as it was going to be. It's now, let's see. It is at 1765. We have 2 days to come up with $1,765, and thanks to our anonymous benefactor for a Have a Show on Me. Basically what that means is, let's see, going all the way back to Friday, we have $35 of last Thursday funded. I think that's where we are. Yeah. So, we got a lot of catching up to do. But it was a pretty day here, and I'm always in a better mood on a pretty day. And I guess I'm being selfish because I'm not talking about the hell and damnation that yawned open on Southwest Florida. We talked about that yesterday. But one thing, because my mind... that part of Florida got scrubbed pretty well, pretty badly. The footage, I saw some time-lapse footage of the storm surge coming in. No, I will not repeat that, Emilio. I'm trying to stay in the good graces of that Australian girl in my phone. But the storm surge was awful, and it was worse than anybody could have... it wasn't imagined, it was projected. You know, climate scientists who project things like storm surges based on science, not some sort of ideological hang-up and desperate undying love for the hydrocarbon industry. They said 12 to 18 feet, and they got the 12-foot storm surge. And all day long, there were, you know, interviews with people who had suffered through this thing. And it was heartrending. And then, of course, there was Ron, governor, white supremacist adjacent, Klansman appointing Florida governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, who only became governor of Florida with the real live, no kidding help of real live, no kidding Nazis, standing at the podium, grunting away all about how, well, you know, Southwest Florida has just experienced a 500-year flood. Oh, blow it out your gazoo, Monkey Up. What are you going to call it when it happens next year? Another 500-year flood? And the year after that? Are they all 500-year floods, even when they become annual floods? Because, you know, Monkey Up can't say climate change, or else, you know, all the people, including the Nazis who voted for him, will have a sad, I know. Ooh, Robin, you're politicizing it. You're goddamn right I'm politicizing it. We are literally watching the planet change for the worse, doing goddamn well near next to nothing about it. And here we are. With a 500-year flood. That's going to happen again next year. I mean, when you're at the point where 500-year floods, or 1,000-year floods, I'm surprised he didn't say it was a 1,000-year flood, happen somewhere either on the Gulf Coast or the Atlantic seaboard every year, I don't think you get to call them 500-year floods anymore. And that particular part of Southwest Florida, well, we talked about this a little bit in the last program, and there's just some places that are not meant to be permanently inhabited by huge loads of people. You know, the population of the state of Florida is somewhere a little north of 22 million people. And that's probably something on the order of maybe 15 million more people than should live there. I mean, if you use Google Earth and you zoom down, neighborhoods in Florida look like something that would have been drawn by, oh, I always forget his name, the guy who designed the alien in Alien and all of those weirdly disturbing drawings. But it does. It looks like something gross and otherworldly. Houses piled upon houses. I heard Carrie Sanders on MSNBC today interviewing a woman in, actually, I think she was on the backside of the storm. Maybe she was in, up in the Sarasota area, Punta Gorda, something like that. And she was talking about how her husband, and of course, I think, is there a Florida accent? I mean, there's a Central Appalachian accent. There's all kinds of Southern accents, but you know, so few people in Florida are actually from Florida. H.R. Geiger, thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Thank you, H.R. Geiger. I don't know why that won't sit, but yeah. If you look down at the way Florida has been overdeveloped, it does. It looks like some sort of nightmarish space alien H.R. Geiger drawing of something that's just sort of, I don't know, assimilated the Florida Peninsula. And as I said, John D. McDonald back in, oh, maybe 1982, in a novel said, every year, and he gave the number for what it was back when he was writing, X number of people come to Florida, and within 2 years, they come to Florida, and they don't realize that Florida wasn't like what it is when they come there. And then 2 years later, they're screaming, close the borders! We've got too many people here! But the people keep coming and coming and coming. And they keep building and building and building in places where nothing was supposed to be built. Barrier islands are barrier islands for a purpose. And when you build up barrier islands stop being able to serve the function of a barrier island. There's a huge hunk of a bridge onto Sanibel Island. It's just gone. And they're not going to rebuild that overnight. And frankly, I wish I could hear from him. Haven't heard from him in a very long time. Not since, I guess, maybe pre-transition. Guy James, my dear, dear friend and colleague, Guy James, was living there at Sanibel. And I really would like to know that he's okay. My friend B-Rez said that they had to take refuge in the second floor of where they live because the water decided to become resident in the first floor. But the earth is what the earth is. I saw an article just a day or so ago saying, and I went, I think it was from the Wall Street Journal of all places. The United States is running out of places to build homes. Lord, if you drive like the drive that I make to when I leave here and I go down to where I grew up in Alabama, which I will do next week. Program note: there will be no program on either Thursday and Friday or Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. Depends on the weather. Depends on, you know. But anyway, high school reunion time. Oh wait, back to Ron Monkey up Duplantis, whom I described as white supremacist adjacent. Brother Deacon Asa with a salient point. He's literally loading people of color onto trains or planes and sending them to labor camps. I think you can drop the adjacent already. Yeah, ixnay on the adjacent, eh, Aubyn Ray? Yeah, we'll just call him white supremacist Florida Governor Ron Monkey up Duplantis, etc., etc. Good call. Very good call. Thank you. But it's, and within, imagine, I mean, this is just, it boggles my mind because, you know, the cognitive scientists tell us that once you move past a certain number of digits, numbers just become a sort of ethereal thing. And I think, I mean, like I said, there's about 22 million people in Florida. 1/7 of the population of Florida had to evacuate. And evacuate is another word that we use to say temporarily migrate from the places where they live to somewhere that would be safer. This is not the sign of a healthy human habitation of an ecosystem. Oh, but they want the sun and the fun. And I understand that. God, back in the spring of 1986, a couple of friends and I loaded into my vehicle, and we set out on spring break, hell-bent on reaching Key West. And it was, you know, it was March in... Save your relatability for your friends, Robin. Hi, Lady B. It was March 1986. We left Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, in India, the ivory is firmly fixed in the faces of the elephants, but in Alabama, the Tuscaloosa. Sorry. I just love that joke. Shame on. But I remember we left out of Tuscaloosa, Birmingham, Montgomery, headed down through Georgia into the Florida Panhandle, and eventually found ourselves on the Florida Turnpike. And I remember when we stopped, just getting out, and it was March, and just feeling this, the sun blaze down upon us, and it felt like magic. It felt like it was wondrous. That March could feel that way. And, you know, little melanin challenged me. We got pretty well burned. We made it to Key West. We stayed at the Hampton Inn there, and from that day forward, it became the Hostel, all Hampton Inns. Now by Hilton, unpaid product placement. Got down there and wanted a piece of key lime pie. We don't have any key lime pie. I mean, you're in the Keys, for God's sakes. What do you mean? Okay, well, I'll take the apple pie. We don't have any apple pie. Well, what kind of pie do you have? No pie! So they're the hostel. Never mind. Memories. No, stop it. No singing. So the allure is very real, and people move down there from places where the winter is bitter and brutal, and you can't blame them for loving it in a way. And of course, Florida has created a tax structure to actually lure people down there to a place that really can't support as many people as the population of Florida is. But all that being as it is, be that as it may, I had a little thought intrude into my noggin, because in the course of covering the disaster, and it's not a natural disaster. It is a disaster in which human beings have played a massive part via climate change and via our insistence on pretending that we can do whatever we want to this planet, and that this planet will simply say, yeah, okay. But in following and the woman, oh my God, I mentioned her earlier, talking to Carrie Sanders, she had a broken humerus, and it was obvious that she was in shock, and she was talking about the horrible guilt she had as the storm crossed and howled about her. Her husband is dealing with terminal cancer. Started in his prostate and then ate its way into his spine. And she talked about how she couldn't move him from his bed. And so, using the strength that she had, she strapped a life jacket onto him so that if the floodwaters came, they wouldn't just drown him in a trice. And then she went and hid under the kitchen table for hours. And the folks at MSNBC, they had phone service. She didn't. And they called the couple's daughter to let her know that her mama and daddy had made it through the storm. The daughter didn't answer the phone, probably because it was an unknown number. But they left her a message. And it was heartbreaking. Just heartbreaking. And of course, that's playing out time after time after time after time. And there will be a body count. There are fears that it is much higher than they even think it might be. And the place that took the biggest hit, we were told repeatedly throughout the course of the day, was Lee County, Florida. So that got me thinking. And I went and I read up on the history of Lee County, Florida, county seat, Fort Myers. And I learned that Lee County, Florida was carved out of Monroe County, Florida. Monroe County, Florida, of course, being named for President James Monroe. Not James Madison, no. The right-wingers are having a shit hemorrhage, as we mentioned toward the end of the program last night, over one of those playing James Madison's crystal flute. And theocratic fascist Matt Walsh is still having a fit. And it is ugly to behold. But there are no consequences for him being a racist piece of shit, which he is. Acting like he has some position or function as an arbiter of the proper appreciation of American history. You know, I didn't know anything about the crystal flute of James Madison, as I said in yesterday's program. But I get to thinking about that too, and I'll bet you James Madison was no flautist, but I'll bet you he owned somebody who was. So there's no reason to think that maybe this flute being played for the first time, that the last time someone played it, it wasn't someone as pale as James Madison. Ooh, critical race theory. Damn, run, everybody, run. But back to James Monroe. Monroe County, Florida was named for James Monroe. And in 1887, Fort Myers had gotten big enough that it met the standards necessary within the Florida Code to become a county of its own. And in 1887, I keep saying 1887, let's see, let's do some ciphering here. 87, 65, 7 months, 2, yeah, 22 years after the Confederacy ran up its final Confederate flag, you know, the solid white one, in 1887, they created a brand new county, carved it out of Monroe County, Florida, and all the white men, pondering what they should name the new county. I mean, I guess there was already a Washington County and a Jefferson County, Florida, and there was clearly a Monroe County. Probably had a Clay County and a Fayette County. You know, all the other good white guys were taken. So what did they name their new county that would have the county seat of Fort Myers? Which, by the way, history, as Lizzo said, is so freaking cool. Fort Myers is Fort Myers because it really was a fort. You know, with soldiers in it, and cannons, and guns. And you know what Fort Myers did? It was chock full of Union troops who were down in Southwest Florida for the purpose of interrupting the Confederate beef supply, because there's a lot of cattle being run down there. And at one point in time, the traders tried to attack Fort Myers. But the brave, loyal to their country Union soldiers whipped the traitors in Butternut and sent them skedaddling. And of course, that was during the Civil War. So by 1887, when all those fine southern white men got together to name their brand new county, they decided to name it after a traitor. The most well-known of traitors, namely Bobby Lee. I don't know what county seat was a county. It was a fort that pushed back against our brave boys in Butternut. Well, we may have that fort as our county seat, but by God, the county it's in is going to be named for a slave-whipping general and traitor to the United States of America, Robert E. Bobby Lee. Sometimes American history isn't so freaking cool. But that's why Lee County, Florida is Lee County, Florida. And maybe, just maybe, while the tax dollars from New York and Massachusetts and New Jersey and California and Oregon or Washington are going to rebuild the infrastructure of Southwest Florida, where all those people shouldn't be living, but let's not talk about that because then we'd have to talk about places like L.A. and Las Vegas and Phoenix. We'll leave that to the side. But maybe while all those federal tax dollars are going down there and rebuilding a place that Mother Nature's just going to come and scrub clean again. And by the way, Monkey Up said, you know, we're not talking about repairing. We're talking about rebuilding. Better, newer, bigger. Yeah. And but maybe in the midst of all this rebuilding, it might be a nice idea because, you know, especially, you know, the Christians are out there and the Christians always think that, you know, there's a spiritual realm reason for everything that happens. Well, does that mean that I can say that here in the Here in the second year of the third decade of the 21st century of the common era, when a hurricane came and knocked the shit out of Lee County, Florida, that maybe that was the universe saying maybe it shouldn't be named Lee County anymore? How about we name it Rosewood County, Florida, as a permanent reminder of what was done to that community? You know, by white men. Yeah, see, I'm making all those little delicate snowflake, tender, dainty little pale maggots' hearts ache. But when's a better time? I wonder if anybody's ever raised the idea of changing the name of Lee County. By the way, there's another county in Florida probably needs to be changed. Dixie County. Really? But let's focus on Lee County, shall we? Lee County. Yeah, I'm thinking in the 21st century, we don't need any counties named after any traitors anywhere in the United States. I mean, even out in Seattle, the city parents, you know, recognizing for whom their county was named, Rufus King, briefly Vice President of the United States and bedmate of, no, I'm not kidding, of James Buchanan, who his fellow senators called Nancy. And yes, he and James Buchanan slept together. And they were valid. But King County, Washington was named for Rufus King. But the city parents said, well, yeah, it was. But you know what? We're going to issue a proclamation saying that it's now named for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Could the county government in Florida, would Ron Monkey Up DeClanta step in and say, oh, you're erasing our heritage. Oh, so your heritage is treason, is it? Oh, sorry, I'm playing with straw man again. Just something to think about, you know, alongside, you know, putting ExxonMobil's logo and BP's logo and Royal Dutch Shell's logo and Chevron's logo and Peabody Energy's logo and Alpha Natural Resources' logo, and, you know, on the arms of hurricanes when they go spiraling toward vastly overpopulated parts of the country. It's just an idea to, you know, to just to bounce around and, you know, see what works. Yeah. I mean, my God, this would have been a much better conversation in the for-profit media today than just constantly playing over and over and over and over again the footage of the with precious little damned talk about why the hurricane was so damn strong. By the way, this in from Darlene in Connecticut, from the Washington Post. Ian is forecast to regain hurricane strength and strike South Carolina. God, it's almost like the goddess of irony is really pissed. Darlene says, and it's going to regain strength, possibly to a Cat 1 or Cat 2. You and I bitch and moan about losing summer and it getting cold out, but the cold fronts from Canada kept Fiona away from us, and although the latest front won't get here until Sunday, meaning we'll get hit with wind and rain on Saturday, chances are we would have had a good shot at avoiding disaster with Ian if he had decided to take a different track up the East Coast instead of heading into the Gulf, just trying to look at things more positively. Just trying. And I'm proud of you for trying, Darlene. I am too. I mean, I was looking out at the blue skies today. It was a perfect autumn day. And I don't know. But thank you for the attempt. Ian is forecast to regain hurricane strength, strike South Carolina. Areas from northern Florida all the way up through New York City could see impacts from Ian, which has resumed strengthening. And then, right on time, the New York Times with an alert. Ian gained strength over the Atlantic and surged back to hurricane status after slamming Florida. It's set to hit South Carolina on Friday. You know, the previous forecast here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by Coal Man Chinyastan said that we were going to get rained on Saturday and Sunday. You know, it was the outer bands of the weakened tropical storms. I don't know, but if it comes into South Carolina, who knows what I'm going to be driving through when I leave for, but yeah. Goes across Florida, spins up, gets stronger, and whack! Hits South Carolina. Well, don't worry. Don't worry, Florida. Don't worry, South Carolina. The good, hardworking, decent people of California and Oregon and Washington and Illinois and Massachusetts and New York and Vermont and, Rhode Island and Connecticut, and New Jersey, they'll bust their asses to make sure you've got enough money to rebuild and maybe line some of your politicians' pockets along the way. As to Lee County, Florida, Flavio lets us know, Lee County is represented in the United States House of Representatives by Byron Donald, a Republican from Florida of the 19th District, and by Greg Stuba, a Republican from Florida of the 17th District. Unlike most urban counties, Lee County is a Republican stronghold in presidential elections. The last Democratic presidential candidate to win the county was Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1944. Right, because, well, after that, you know, there was that Harry Truman out there, you know, integrating the military, and God knows, and the white folks of Lee County, Florida, far preferred Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon to John Kennedy in 1960. Wow, they went for in your heart you know he's right, but in your guts you know he's nuts, Barry Goldwater in 1964, Nixon in 68, Nixon in 72, Ford in 76, Reagan in 80, Reagan in 84, Bush in 88, Bush in 92. Jesus, they voted for Bob Dole in 1996, W in 2000, W in 2004. They went for, oh my God, I'm sure they were positively transfixed by the running mate to John Maverick McCain in 2008, and they were right there with Bishop Willard's binders full of women in 2012. You can only guess at what the numbers probably were in 2016. You know, when you string out something like that, you know, the last Democratic presidential candidate to win the county was Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1944, and you those are some stupid people. Oh, and by the way, just one other thing to toss into the mix here. Early on in the congressional career of one Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, back long about 2012, was it? When Superstorm Sandy slammed the living bejesus out of New Jersey and New York and wreaked havoc. Yes, young and ambitious member of the House of Representatives, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, voted against federal disaster relief aid for New York and New Jersey. I don't think it's overly political to remind people of that fact, is it? God, wouldn't it be nice if we had the kind of media infrastructure to run some ads so people in Florida in this gubernatorial election year might be reminded that in their hour of need, Democrats aren't flinching. Democrats aren't shrinking back. Democrats are busting their ass. A Democratic presidential administration is busting its ass to make sure that that vastly overpopulated state has everything it needs to rebuild so the next hurricane can knock the shit out of it again. But that their governor, who thinks he deserves a second term, didn't feel the same way about suffering people in New Jersey and New York. And, you know, out on Staten Island, which is wall-to-wall maggots. He told them to go f*** themselves. Yeah? Yeah! Flavio adds, I have a buddy from Wisconsin in Bonita Springs. My buddy Mike lives with his dad in Bonita Springs, and I got word they're okay except for the power being out and no water. Bonita Springs is between Naples and Fort Myers. I'm glad they are. I was ever so relieved to see that my buddy B-Rez and his beloved Allison and their little family were okay. They got a hell of a lot of cleaning up to do ahead of them. But they're okay. Hey, Larry in Liberalville, that's huge. I'll respond when we go to the Green News Report here in a little bit, but we've got a fighting chance now. To get out of September. Okay. That's astonishing, Larry. Thank you. In the meantime, what did I say the fundraising goal is? It was 1765. We'll start out with Larry in Liberalville saying, I'd like to add a $100 matching challenge in the name of Florida's favorite son, Magalardo, who lives in, well, you know where he lives. So there's a $100 matching challenge out there. And that will take us down to $1,565 if it's met. And, Larry, however you want to do that, that's fine. If you want to, you can go to the PayPal link at headon.live. I trust you're listening live. But the PayPal link at headon.live, is right there on the main page. Works easy, works great. Or if you want to use snail mail, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. And that's for anybody else who wants to use the post office box address. And I apologize for saying snail mail. I like the U.S. Postal Service. I'm downright fond of it. Randy Radar says, funny, even after integrating the military oh so long ago, there are a heck of a lot of private Rodriguezes, but not a lot of general Rodriguezes. But, wait, no. When I go to Charleston, on the rare occasions, when I get in the car, go down the mountain, go to Charleston, I cross the Kanawha River at Chelyan, C-H-E-L-Y-A-N, and I cross the Admiral Lopez Bridge. So, actually, the military has busted its ass to have more diversity in its commissioned officer ranks. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs jumping in on the challenge from Larry in Liberalville. And Darlene asks, with whose money? The devastation in Florida is eye-popping and upsetting, but let's call it out here. Chances are pretty damned good that the blue states will be footing most of the price tag for Florida's rebuilding. You know, the blue states! I just wanted to mention that. DeSantis can act all tough and like he's in control, but he's a lying sack of shit. Oh, hang on, Darlene adds. Why not use one of their Christian fascist canards and say this?
Hurricane Ian was God's retribution against DeSantis's and by proxy Florida's kidnapping, misleading, and politicization of vulnerable and destitute human beings. You know, those people.
The Venezuelan immigrants who were here as asylum seekers and whose asylum was in process. I like that. Or, you know, can we add to that? I know, she's going to do it again. Yes, she is. Can we add to that, Darlene? Can we say that it's also God's retribution for violating what his boy, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, said, you know, if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. In other words, when you pushed your Don't Say Gay bill, when you pushed to out trans kids against their will, when you refuse to use their preferred pronouns. You did that to Jesus, too, and he sent a hurricane to kick your clan boy ass. Yeah, I think we can say that. Sure we can. Kind of off and running on Thorn in the Side Thursday, aren't we? What else? I mean, it's the for-profit media news cycle has been all hurricane all the time, all day. But there's more than that. There's always more than that. What? Okay, how do I not click on this, Brother Deacon? From The Guardian, from this past Monday, testicle-toasting Tucky Carlson, he's so manly, delivered a eulogy recently. In point of fact, he went to Stockton, California last Saturday to eulogize and ryanize Ralph Sonny Barger. If the name doesn't exactly ring an immediate bell, Ralph Sonny Barger is the longtime president of the Hells Angels. And I'm trying to figure out why testicle... Well, I guess because they're manly and violent or something, and he likes to be... Yeah. Really? The Hells Angels are Tucker Carlson fans? Jesus, I can remember when they were respectable and, you know, ran around with Hunter Thompson, for God's sakes. Or let him run around with them. And they're the same old Hells Angels they've always been. They're in the murder-for-hire business. They're in the business of manufacturing and distributing meth. They run networks of cocaine and heroin and weed. Dabble in firearms sales and whatever other criminal activities they can get into. That, at least, according to the Justice Department. I'm trying to sort out how the invitation even happened, but he showed up in Stockton at the funeral and said, "Stand tall, stand loyal, remain free, and always value honor." Sonny Barger died of throat cancer in June. He'd been with the Angels since 1957. So I guess it's a fair supposition that maybe he was familiar with Dr. Thompson and Dr. Thompson familiar with him. He was with the Angels when the Angels provided security to the Rolling Stones at Altamont, and then stabbed a Stones fan to death, Meredith Hunter. Barger was charged in 1979 with racketeering under the RICO Act. Somehow or another, his wife and he were acquitted outright. ...7,000 people showed up for that funeral. Testicle Toasting Tucky said, "Why aren't we hearing that from the people who run the country? Why is it left to Sonny Barger to say, stand tall, stay loyal, remain free, and always value honor? The President of the United States should be saying that every single morning as he salutes the flag. But only Sonny Barger is saying it." Sonny ain't saying shit, Tucky. Sonny's dead. "Stand tall, stay loyal, remain free, and always value honor." And I thought to myself, I want to pay tribute to the man who spoke those words. He did do 3.5 years of a 4-year federal sentence for supplying explosives to destroy a rival motorcycle gang. He claimed he was entrapped by the FBI. Later on, he married and divorced his wife, Beth, after they had a domestic dispute. Apparently, when you have a domestic dispute with the king of the Hells Angels, you wind up hospitalized with a broken rib and a lacerated spleen. He did eight days in jail for aggravated assault on that one. And that's who Testicle Toasting Tucky Carlson went and eulogized. Because Tucky's a patriot. Yeah, what makes me think that if Tucky rode with the Angels, he'd have to ride bitch. Just saying. Emilio pointing out, you know, Tucker's bow tie really did yell manly. We don't see it anymore because he wears it around his testicles now. Okay. You qualified, Emilio. Nothing is surprising anymore. Oh, and let's run out to Kansas City for a minute, shall we? Story from the Kansas City Star. Kansas City and Jackson County, where in Kansas City, Missouri, is located, just had to shell out $405,000 over underwire bras. No kidding. Not a joke. The county commission agreed to spend $405,000 this week to settle a pair of sex discrimination lawsuits that were filed in 2020 by two women who were longtime employees of the Jackson County Detention Center. They were their own prison guards. This isn't one of those forcing a pregnant woman in solitary confinement to give birth on the filthy floor of a jail cell stories like we had last night. These were women who worked for the county jail and the metal detector system that was put in place by Jackson County to try to stop dirty jail guards from sneaking in phones and drugs that they then dealt to the inmates. But along the way, lawyers who happen to be women, who happen to be wearing underwire bras, pointed out that they would be denied entry to see their clients because their bra would set off the metal detector. And then it turned out that the center director, one Diana Turner, refused to even look for a solution that would let these women dress as they chose to perform their legal duties as counsel to their incarcerated clients. She wouldn't wand, she wouldn't authorize a pat down. And then 75 women protested outside the courthouse, yelling, "We need support," and carrying signs that said, "My underwire bras, no threat, and neither am I." But then the damnedest thing happened. Shortly after the protests, suddenly the metal detectors stopped alerting on underwires. About a week after the protest, one of the lawyers said, "You know, it's not that the women have gotten new bras. After all the hubbub last week," what's all the hubbub? "I think they probably adjusted it, the metal detector, without saying they adjusted it. And then they finally put in a secondary screening policy for lawyers and other visitors who had reason to have contact with inmates." Here's the thing, though. They continued to hang their own guards out to dry. So a couple of jail guards, Charlotte Harden and Linda Hingle, sued after trying and trying and trying and trying just to simply have the policy modified. Men's belts were setting off the metal detector, too, and they were allowed to just take their belts off and walk right through. So the two jail employees had to go into the locker room, take off their bras, go through the metal detector, and then, like, go in a stall in the restroom and put them back on. But then they said, no, you can't pass your bra through the X-ray machine like the guys were doing with their belts. Yeah, the upstairs folks said, oh, we do not scan an undergarment of any kind for clearance. This behavior is inappropriate, unacceptable. And I can't imagine being the lawyer who drafts the complaint, but, you know, it is what it is. And the suit papers said the Jackson County Jail Administration instituted the policy to protect male employees from any discomfort in viewing a woman's bra. Who are the male employees? Discomfort in seeing a woman's bra? What? Yeah, so the women were put through humiliation, aggravation, and so they decided, the legislature this past Monday decided to shell out $255,000 to Ms. Harden and $150,000 to settle Ms. Hengels. And the warden, Forte, according to the Kansas City Star, spent nearly an hour discussing other matters Monday before the legislature's Justice and Law Enforcement Committee. During the sometimes testy and wide-ranging discussion, he complained about one previous time he appeared before the body to attend a fake hearing. Oh, I bet I know how he votes. And that was the time that the county legislature had asked him to address the jail screening process. That was 2019. This didn't go over well with county legislator Crystal Williams, who said, you know, the bra issue led to the lawsuits that we're settling this week. And legislator Jalen Anderson said, that fake hearing was a result of not adhering to several people's requests and will cost taxpayers $405,000. That pisses me off. Why should taxpayers be on the hook for that asshole's behavior? Yeah, I guess because, you know, the warden and the jail director, Diana, who the hell she is, can't cough up the 405 on their own. Y'all, for pity's sakes. Matt in San Francisco writing it. Meth? Robin, how dare you jump to conclusions about the Hells Angels? Although I must confess, when I used and dealt meth, my dealer happened to be a Hells Angel. I'm sure the neighbors were wondering why a 20-year-old gay boy was always dropping by the bikers' hangout. Sometimes I'm amazed that I lived through those times to tell the story. It was really good meth, though. Good enough to convince me I had a problem and needed to get help. I'm so glad you did, Matt. I'm so glad you did. And you lived to tell the story, and you lived to tell the story to a larger and loving community. And I think that's freaking beautiful. I just do. Although, just not to put too fine a point on it, how many radio shows are there out there where we talk about the Tucky Carlson eulogizing the head of the Hells Angels and the Hells Angels being in the meth business, and a member of the community writes in and says, I as a 20-year-old gay boy, I used to buy my meth from a Hells Angel. Tell me, how many other radios? Are they talking about this over on the multi-million dollar Joe Rogaine program? Is Matt Walsh taking time out from braying about Lizzo playing a crystal flute? No. Probably not even happening on our side of the broadcast spectrum. only here. We few, we happy few, we band of siblings. Thank you, Matt. So many days, you just absolutely make my evening. Thank you. Thank you. Dave in the Blind said, I just sent the donation Christine asked me to send. Thank you. Tell Christine we love her and we love you too. So that was a heck of a Phil a Robster hour. What's going on? What? In other words, Brother Deacon Asa points out, Mr. Blue Lives Matter, one rubber tucky, eulogizes cop killers. And then as to the Kansas City thing, do you see the deep, terrifying stupidity with this screening scheme here? If they're dirty jail guards, then what's to stop them from hiding the shit in their bras anyway and leave it in the locker with the bra while they're getting screened? Oh, to stupid hurts. Well, I got the idea that they were taking them off, coming out, putting them in the little plastic bin, running it through the x-ray machine, and I don't think the I think the meth would show up in the little pouches in the little slidey hole cups in the side of the bra. Never mind. Thorn in the side Thursday, y'all. I'm telling you. And we are only getting started. So with $75 more of a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Larry in Liberalville, let's check in and see what Brad and Desi have for us via the Green News Report, shall we? Oh, yes. Do let's.
It's Thursday, September 29, 2022.
This is a major, major storm. This is going to be a nasty, nasty day, 2 days. So this is going to be a rough stretch.
Hurricane Ian causes widespread damage and smashes records as it pummels Florida. Senator Joe Manchin's controversial permitting reform bill collapses in the Senate. Plus,
European leaders are accusing Russia of sabotage.
Massive, mysterious ruptures on Russian natural gas pipelines to Europe.
All of those mysteries and disasters straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This is going to be something that is going to be there for days and weeks and months and unfortunately even years.
And unfortunately, not unlike Governor Ron DeSantis. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we have been watching this one coming in for days, and, well, looks like now it has.
Yes, Hurricane Ian made landfall on the west coast of Florida on Wednesday as a powerful Category 4 storm, just shy of a Category 5, near Fort Myers, battering the peninsula with catastrophic storm surge, winds, and flooding. According to preliminary data, Ian's storm surge was at least 12 feet. It toppled high water records, particularly in Fort Myers and Naples. At least 2 million Floridians are without power, and that is likely to increase as the storm crawls across Florida. Some areas could remain without electricity for days or longer amid stifling heat and humidity. Floods also impacted several municipal water systems. The National Hurricane Center forecasts the slow-moving storm will bring more torrential rainfall and flooding over the next several days. Parts of Florida could receive as much as 30 inches of rain. States of emergency have already been declared by governors in Georgia, Virginia, and the Carolinas as Ian tracks northward, and the storm may also spawn tornadoes.
Yeah, that's a whole lot of splaining some of those Florida climate change deniers are going to have to come up with. 30 inches of rain?
Yep. On top of breaking flood records, Ian also set a new record for rapid intensification so close to landfall. It broke the wind speed record for a storm this late in the calendar year, and it now ranks in the top five most intense hurricanes ever to make landfall in the United States. Rapid intensification, storm intensity, higher storm surge due to rising sea levels, all are linked to man-made global warming.
Go figure.
At the White House, President Biden pledged long-term federal assistance for the response and recovery. He also noted that the storm is not affecting gasoline production at refineries in the Gulf, with a warning for oil and gas companies.
Do not use this as an excuse to raise gasoline prices or gouge the American people. If gas companies try to use this storm to raise prices at the pump, I will ask officials to look into whether price gouging is going on.
Recovery will be long and arduous for the state, with losses and damages projected to be in the billions. Florida's property insurance market was already unstable due to heavy losses from storms in previous years. At least 10 insurers in the state went bankrupt in the last year alone.
So that'll fall on the taxpayers to have to cover those losses in that case?
Most likely.
Go figure.
In other news, European leaders have accused Russia of sabotage in three massive ruptures that were observed on the two Nord Stream undersea natural gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea. An investigation is underway, but the EU leaders say Russia directly benefits from higher energy prices and economic disruption across Europe. Both pipelines were out of service as a consequence of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The leaks don't impact Europe's energy supplies, but are releasing massive amounts of climate-warming methane into the atmosphere.
They don't affect Europe's supply because Russia had already shut down those pipelines to Europe?
Correct.
And Europe has been finding their gas elsewhere in advance of winter.
Indeed. Here in the U.S., the Forest Service has launched a criminal investigation into electric utility giant Pacific Gas and Electric and whether its equipment ignited the Mosquito Fire, California's biggest wildfire of 2022 so far. PG&E's decrepit equipment has been found responsible for sparking many deadly fires in the state over the last several years. And finally, in the nation's capital, Coal State Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia withdrew his very controversial legislation focused on permitting reform to speed up energy projects, both fossil and renewable, around the country. It was part of a side deal that Manchin had made with Senate leadership to secure his vote for the Inflation Reduction Act. The bill had split the Democratic caucus, was seen as a massive gift to the fossil fuel industry, but it was Republicans who ultimately ensured the demise of Manchin's bill, despite the huge boost to fossil fuels.
Republicans. I'm starting to not trust those guys. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
When till that deal come round, don't you let that deal go round.
Ooh, a little Grateful Dead bumper is always nice. I like that. So, this is, of course, Conversation Radio, which means if you'd like to get in on said conversation, you're welcome to chime in either at the stress line, area code 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, and then there is Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, and then 304-574-8178 rings into the same Skype line. And if you'd like to jump in, you're more than welcome to bring whatever you've got to the table. And let's see, whenever you get one of these natural disaster stories, and I have a hard time calling the entirety of Ian a natural disaster. It's in large part an unnatural disaster brought on by, you know, human activity. So there we are. In the midst of all the shocking and horrifying video of Hurricane Ian lashing the living hell out of Fort Myers. Well, the Miami New Times reporting yesterday said, when the storm came ashore on September 28th, it decimated neighborhoods with Category 4 winds and brought a destructive storm surge that submerged city blocks in Lee County. And then this. According to Lee County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Anita Iriarte, the Sheriff's Office declined to evacuate inmates from its 457-bed downtown Fort Myers jail as Hurricane Ian neared Cat 5 status and closed in on the area. Sheriff Carmine Marceno runs the jail. And here's the thing. His own map showed that the jail was inside a mandatory evacuation zone. The National Hurricane Center was predicting a storm surge of at least 9 feet. But, you know, and I'm sure Sheriff Marceno was not hanging out at the jail. Footage from the Edison Bank in Fort Myers, roughly two blocks from the river, and about a half a mile away from the jail, showed a downtown block inundated with floodwaters around 3:45 p.m. yesterday. The water in one neighborhood in the downtown district reportedly rose to 4 feet deep by 4:30. And reporting from the New Times pointed out that there's a trend in this country. Inmates have been left behind in jails during hurricanes in Louisiana, South Carolina, Texas, and Virginia. It's almost like there's a pattern there, isn't there? Will there be any kind of consequences for Sheriff Carmine Marceno? Something in me says no. No. On the other hand, spokesman Iriarte said, in the event of an emergency, we have procedures in place. The inmates are safe. Yeah, what's the procedure once the water's 8 feet deep? Because the jail's less than 5 blocks from the Caloosahatchee River. And the jail is in evacuation zone A. But when you see things like this, there's always more. It's a toxic little prison industrial complex Ginsu knife. But wait, there's more. Because most of the people sitting in the jail there in Fort Myers aren't convicts. They are people who are being held in advance of trial. And because it's a southern state, and because this is typical of southern states, they are people who have been busted for this, that, or the other thing, but have had a bail imposed upon them that no way in heaven or hell can they make. And of those people convicted who are in jail, the vast majority of them are there on misdemeanors that are under a year in length. And this is typical to the South. Bail is used as a means to incarcerate people, and then, of course, in many instances, to use them as convict labor. And, of course, the Republican legislature of Florida will never do a damned thing to step in. Because, you know, the only reason people are in jail is because they deserve to be in jail. There are no innocent. I mean, I remember years and years ago when cops would tell me, laughing, they would tell me, "Oh, you know, we only bust the guilty ones." Land of the free, y'all. So, it's for those of you who never have, I really cannot recommend enough spending the time that it takes to go through the. I just love that. I love John D. McDonald's writing, and I love the Travis McGee series because there are these beautiful little nuggets of social commentary and observation tucked away in some otherwise pretty interesting, you know, crime fiction. And they and because they run from 1964 to 1985, they all they're kind of a time capsule. And some of it is sexist and misogynist as hell, as were the times. But John D. McDonald knew the place that he had moved to and loved. He was no native Floridian either. But he had a house near Sarasota, faced out onto the Gulf of Mexico. And he saw what was happening to the state that he had adopted and loved. He died in 1985 after an unsuccessful heart bypass operation in Milwaukee, the same year that my father survived his in a successful one in Birmingham, Alabama. Now, meanwhile, when a hurricane approaches, corporate America is not going to let a little thing like a Cat 4 hurricane get in the way of business. So let's talk about Joy Gendusa. She's the CEO of a marketing firm called Postcard Mania. And there's a video of her taking her employees to task for, you know, being all sissified and wanting to evacuate. Jesus, these people. It's like something that Will Rivers Pitt wrote. Bless his memory. Talking about the COVID pandemic, he said, every time we seem like we've got a handle on it, we have to pause because capitalism needs to feed again. This Joy Gendusa, CEO of Postcard Mania, had a meeting on Monday with employees, and she said, I want y'all to raise your hands if you're worried about the storm a-coming. And then she said, it's not going to be that bad. Obviously, you feeling safe and comfortable is of the utmost importance. But I honestly want to continue to deliver, and I want to have a good end of quarter. I want to continue to deliver, which is another way of saying I want us to keep making money, because us making money is more important than, you know, your squishy little feelings about a little Cat 4 hurricane coming. And I want to have a good end of quarter. And when it turns into nothing, I don't want it to be like, great, we all stopped producing because of the media, and maybe that it thought it was maybe it's going to be terrible. And then the internet found it. And I guess Joy Gendusa got dragged a little bit. The Washington Post reached out to some employees there after Joy Gendusa. It said, no, 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 we'll be closed Wednesday and Thursday. One employee told the Washington Post, there's no company worth sacrificing for. I wouldn't give my life for any company. Another employee said, there was a huge disconnect between her and her employees. Not everybody lives in a nice place or in a safe place like her. God. The blood-soaked altar of Holy Prophet. That's P-R-O-F-I-T. I want to hope everybody there was able to stay safe. It ain't for anything Joy Gendusa was thinking before she got dragged on social media. It kind of reminds me of Don Blankenship. Remember Don Blankenship? Yeah, he was convicted of ripping off shareholders. A misdemeanor. But he was acquitted of doing things that led to the incineration of 29 human beings. Work like you mean it. If you ain't moving coal, you ain't working. I don't want to hear about you guys working on safety issues. I want to hear about you running coal. I want to hear about you sending postcards. That's what we're here for, postcards. I want to see postcards. I want to continue to deliver, and I want to have a good end of the quarter. That's what I want. I have been looking at the cutest little Mercedes-Benz convertible. And as we talked about earlier this week, with the law out in Idaho, in which we now find that the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is secondary to the Idaho legislature's fascination with fetuses, well, there is still, and will continue to be, action taking place within the government of the United States of America relative to a woman's right to make decisions about the workings of her own body. And there was a hearing yesterday, or not a hearing, but there was some floor action in the House. And Representative Alyssa Slotkin, a Democrat from Michigan, took to the floor to blister the hide off the maggots about a piece of legislation that she has introduced. It's called the Solid Start Act. And what it is, it's actually a bill to make the transition back into civilian society more likely to be successful for veterans mustered out of the military. And the bill contains a provision that says that the Department of Veterans Affairs will be required to provide women veterans with information tailored to their specific health care needs, and that in turn would be in concert with new VA policy that says women vets can have access to abortion services who are victims of rape, incest, or whose life is jeopardized. This, of course, caused Republicans to, fetus fetishists, to begin hopping up and down and barking and grunting and hooting and throwing hissies, about the precious little fetuses. And the Republicans then decided that they wanted to block the bill. this did not play well with Representative Slotkin.
In terms of making decisions on behalf of women, if you want to take a veterans bill and make it about abortion, then let's do it. What you are saying, and you're saying in front of the American people, is that you believe a veteran who has been raped, who is the victim of incest, and who is having a dangerous miscarriage, does not deserve access to abortion. You are saying, unless you correct me and tell me what you believe a woman deserves to have when she has been raped, the victim of incest, or is in the middle of a dangerous miscarriage, if you can't state it, then be clear. You believe in no exceptions for women, a cold, heartless, violent approach to women's health. You want to ban all abortions. That is your goal. Many of you have been open about that. And if you flip the House, we know that you will put forward a full ban on all abortion for all states. You've been clear about it. You want to turn a veterans bill into an abortion bill. Let's do it. Not one of you are a medical doctor. Not one of you. What the VA guidelines say is that if you've been raped or the victim of incest or a medical professional deems that your pregnancy is a risk to your health, the one of four women in this country who has had a miscarriage, probably many women in this room, that you are a better judge of who gets to decide the future of their life and not a medical doctor? Who do you think you are? You are politicians. We are all on this floor, elected officials and not medical professionals. If it was your wife, your daughter, who was suffering through a miscarriage, are you going to tell her she can't until her fever gets high enough, until she's bleeding harder? That's what's happening in the state of Texas right now. If that's what you want for veterans, shame on you. Shame on you. I'm sorry. We built this bill to be bipartisan. I sought your support particularly, sir. And you're making it a political issue. Shame on you. You all have pictures of veterans in your office, proud to show your pride in our veterans. It should be the most bipartisan issue in the world, and you're making it political. Shame on you.
Yeah. Kind of wish she would have said, if that's what you want, say it's what you want. Say it out loud. Don't hide. Well, if they will hold veterans hostages over their fetus fetish, and in fact, this country does allow Republicans to take over the House, God help us all, men, women, and non-binary. Because they will not stop. We've seen it. And I am yearning to find... I've been looking. I need more information coming out from Idaho. I want to know if some faculty member will sue over the prior restraint on speech and violation of the First Amendment of the state of Idaho. But I recognize it's a dicey proposition. They might even win a preliminary injunction in the district court level. It might even be upheld at the circuit court level. But then it will go to our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties on the Supreme Court. And I really, I want them to. I mean, they've said that the free speech rights of a corporation are compromised if the government passes a law that says insurance companies have to cover contraception. That violates the free speech rights of hobby fucking lobby, and that wasn't even this wild-eyed court. I kind of want to hear them say that the free speech rights of professors in colleges in maggot states don't mean shit. I mean, I don't want to hear them say it, but I want them to be forced. If that's what they want, I want them to have to say it out loud. and then we act accordingly. Is that radical? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, going back to Hurricane Ian, at least a dozen deaths have been noted so far. But they're trying not to talk about it, but President Biden said today that this could be the deadliest hurricane in Florida's history. The numbers are still unclear, but we're hearing early reports of what may be substantial loss of life. One person in hospice care died in Osceola County. 72-year-old man in Deltona died when he went outside to drain his swimming pool during the storm. Because that's a thing down there. Oh, you got to drain your swimming pool. People assessing storm damage have reported collapsed buildings. There was video of power lines exploding in the water. Monkey Up said that Sanibel got hit with really biblical storm surge. Biblical. And then the aforementioned Sheriff Carmine Marcino, who left his prisoners to live or die in his goddamn jail, said, "I literally just got out of a helicopter where I was able to take a complete tour of the entire county, and there's really no words that I can say to tell you what I've seen." Wind speeds were around 150 miles per hour when it came ashore. And now, as Darlene advised us earlier in the program, the entire coast of South Carolina is under hurricane warnings. And tropical storm warnings are in place from Jupiter, Florida, to Duck, North Carolina. A foot of rain fell in a matter of hours. It's breathtaking. It really, really is. Meanwhile, out in the Arizona stand. Hi, Suman. There was a debate between the attorney general candidates. And it was apparently a real Lulu. Squaring off were Abraham Hamada, who is a maggot and a proponent of the big lie, and he appears in the positively goofy film 2000 Mules. And his opponent, a sane Democrat, Chris Mays, is trying to be the grown-up in the contest. You know, I feel like, I don't know, this Hamada dude should probably be wearing a little hat with a propeller on the top. And one of those slide whistles.
Question regarding some tweets that you made. I'm going to prosecute the crimes of the rigged 2020 election.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just forget about the fraud of 2020. I'm going to hold them accountable. Your day of reckoning is coming when I take office in January of 2023. What crimes? Who is going to be held accountable? Who will be held to reckoning? What are you talking about here?
All Arizonans want right now, Ted, is free, fair, and competent elections. And, you know, the media has shifted the narrative by saying that there was no fraud to saying there wasn't enough fraud to overturn the elections. We're already seeing prosecutions happening. I mean, just the other month, this administration prosecuted in Yuma County the former San Luis mayor for ballot harvesting. So there are cases, and there's an ongoing investigation still too, Ted. So I am committed to defending the law, and there are instances of fraud. I don't think, you know, it's an interesting argument you're making, because there's an ongoing investigation. So when I'm Attorney General,
he didn't make
course,
an argument. He just asked a question.
You prosecute crimes that occurred in the past, and that's exactly what I intend to do as Attorney General.
Do you think the 2020 election was rigged in Arizona?
Ted, if you look at what happened, we literally at the time had elected officials changing the rules in the middle of the game. All of us want free, fair, and competent elections. We had a federal judge that was Obama appointed. He had no authority to extend the voting registration deadline, and he did by 3 weeks.
So,
he got get slapped down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yes, the answer is yes. Do you think it was rigged?
If you're looking at the media, had influence on this too,
okay,
Ted.
All right.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Obviously, my opponent is anti-democratic. He just told you that he does not believe that we had a fair and safe election, which we did in 2020. You know, my opponent knows a few things about voter fraud, since he admitted to casting his own mother's ballot in the 2000s. But here's the deal. We have the safest, most secure elections in America. And my opponent wouldn't answer your question, Ted. Exactly which elections officials are you going to lock up, Abe? You stood on a stage in Prescott Valley outside of my hometown and you chanted, "Lock them up," about elections officials like Leslie Hoffman. Who are you talking about? Are you talking about Leslie Hoffman? Are you talking about Clint Hickman? Are you talking about Bill Gates, both Republicans? No,
Chris,
just a second.
Are you filibuster this.
No.
Please.
Are you talking about Stephen Richer, one of the most successful Republican recorders in Arizona? They ran safe and fair elections, and it's rhetoric like that is getting our elections officials into a situation where they're the subject of intimidation, harassment, and even death threats. And Ted, I want to tell you something.
When I'm AG,
we're not going to put up with that.
Okay.
That was a lot.
It was a lot. You have a chance to respond.
Well, there's a lot to respond to. But let me, you know, helping my mom vote on a ballot when I'm 15, I think every Arizona recognizes, you know, that is such a ridiculous argument. But let me tell you, I'm going to lock up those who are criminals who commit fraud, just like the current administration is doing. When you saw a former mayor of San Luis ballot harvesting, Chris, would you prosecute that case? I want free, fair, and competent elections. I don't think that's so much to ask for. What you're witnessing right now is this erosion of confidence in elections.
He keeps repeating that phrase, but I'm having a hard time understanding if is he saying free, fair, and competent, or is he saying free, fair, incompetent? Because something in me wants to think he's saying free, fair, incompetent, and it jibes with everything he's saying.
Election system. And what I've served in the military, and I know, rightly or wrongly, we've spread democracy around the world all over. And we see those videos.
Run up the bloody shirt, Abe. Run up the bloody shirt.
Videos of them dipping their fingers in ink, and they're so proud that they voted. And that's exactly when you have the same confidence in our elections as well. And that's exactly what I'm committed to doing.
I want to follow up. You just cast the issue with your mother's ballot as helping her vote. You had written online that you cast her ballot for her for someone that she didn't want to vote for.
Stacey,
clarify.
I don't recall. This was 15, 16 years ago.
But no, I don't remember.
Sure, you've done the viewers a disservice by not doing your journalist ethical duty by disclosing the fact that my opponent used to be a reporter at your paper. And she was accused of insider trading when she was at the Arizona Republic. And you have not disclosed that. So now it seems like I came to debate my opponent. I didn't know I was going to be debating all three of you. But, I mean, I think it's ridiculous to suggest that what I do at 15 is somehow going to affect me when I'm attorney general. You know, I've been involved in politics for a while. I understand the issues. But, you know, I think people just want a fair and honest debate. I'm willing to take tough questions, but this is not what viewers care about, Stacey.
I was not even 15 when Chris Mayes worked at the Arizona Republic.
Exactly why I'm debating with you again, Stacey. Well, the Arizona Republic should disclose the fact that my opponent was a reporter at the Republic. She was even kicked off the campaign bus for John McCain's run for president because of how dishonest John McCain thought she was as a journalist.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Look, I was a reporter for the Arizona Republic 22 years ago. I'm proud of my time as a reporter, and I was kicked off the McCain bus because John McCain didn't like the Arizona Republic, like a lot of hometown.
Like me.
I guess so, Abe. But look, you know, John McCain ended up supporting me. I spent 30 years, Abe, as a Republican. Just 1 year shy of the amount of time you've been alive on this earth. And John McCain supported me. And one of the things I'm proudest of is the fact that when Senator McCain, one of my heroes, was on the ballot, I was the second highest vote getter, second only to him, when we were running for statewide office. I represented 7 million Arizonans, and proudly on the Arizona Corporation Commission, fighting consumer fraud, fighting against undue utility rate increases. And this is the stuff that my opponent throws out is absurd. I was not accused of anything, and it's a whole.
Okay. So you were not accused of insider trading?
No, I wasn't, Abe.
Okay. Apologize for insider trading.
And I think you ought to be very careful about your statements in that regard.
Go back and take a look at the record.
Chris, anyway, I was a reporter 22 years ago.
Okay, we've got. I just want to make sure that we're clear about this. Would you have signed on as a witness to the 2020 election?
Which people again? I think the viewers are seeing this. I like tough questions. Ted?
Yeah, he likes them, but sure. But hold on. Because, you know, 15-year-olds are assholes sometimes. I know nobody in the Horn Family Community Congregation ever was, but some 15-year-olds are assholes. And what this little asshole did was he marked his mother's ballot for a candidate that she did not want to vote for. And then cast that ballot. That's voter fraud. Now, maybe the statute of limitations has run because it was 15 years ago and this little neo-maxi Zoom dweeby is all of 30. And, you know, how hilarious that Ms. Mays is a Democrat now. She would still happily be a Republican, a McCain Republican, a Mavericky Republican, if her party had not been taken over by the maggots. Now, if this little fucker gets elected, he will do everything in his power to disenfranchise every Democratic vote in Arizona, especially if Democrats manage to outvote the maggots. There's so much at stake. Secretaries of State campaigns, attorney general campaigns, gubernatorial campaigns. You know, Greg Mastriano in Pennsylvania has said that he will overturn the will of the people in favor of whoever happens to get the maggot nod. Because as was pointed out by President Biden, the way the way the maggots operate is that an election is only free, fair, and clean if the maggots win. It's foreordained. It's predetermined. And we are inside of 6 weeks from the election. And I, for one, dare to dream. Mark Kelly keeps his seat. Reverend Warnock keeps his seat. God, I want to see the words,
former Senator Rand Paul on the morning, November 9th, in Charles Booker in Kentucky. Dr. Oz has declared that John Fetterman is kicking authority in the balls because he likes to wear hoodies. Huh? Does Dr. Oz ever actually get out and see real life? Hoodies? I mean, that's the de rigueur standard mode of dress for tens of millions of Americans. Hoodies. Now he's showing his disdain for authority by wearing a hoodie. Touch grass, Dr. Oz. Really, touch grass. Y'all, and speaking of senatorial candidates, why, look, we have a Herschel update. Oh, yeah, of course we do. Herschel's domestic violence problems, it won't go away. Not the least of which, including not the least of which, the fact that he held Emilio says hoodies mean urban or black. Yeah, maybe to most people, but let me point something out. Hoodies also serve another purpose. In a certain community, the phrase dysphoria hoodie is kind of big. It's how, among other things, teens and 20-somethings who are questioning gender kind of hide away behind their hoodie. And so there's that, too. Herschel played Russian roulette. And speaking to ESPN, said he played it more than once, saying he loved the competition of it. What? You against four empty chambers and one with a bullet in it, or six, five and one? Jesus, Herschel's the kind of guy who would play Russian roulette with a semi-automatic. And he's getting hammered, Herschel is, with the domestic violence reminders. And he had a conversation with an Atlanta-based site, publication, whatever, website, called Rolling Out, and he said, well, it's just a sin. You know, he without sin cast the first stone. And Raphael Warnock is attacking me for my sins from 15 years ago. What is it about 15 years? Herschel Walker and Abe there in Arizona. Is there a 15-year statute of limitations on being a shitty human being maggot? And now he's running around, Herschel is, trying to make a positive campaign strategy out of not being very smart. And some people are pointing out that it's a dog whistle for nice lily white racist Georgia voters. Slate saying that he's trying to galvanize white conservatives by leaning into antiquated and bigoted ideas. And yet, a few percentage points, just a few percentage points, separate Senator Reverend Warnock and Russian roulette dude. This country. Well, thank you, Billable Rick. Billable Rick says, cowbell for you. Herschel's the kind of guy who'd play Russian roulette with a semi-automatic pistol. I gotta admit, I thought it was kind of clever when I came up with it. Play Russian roulette with a knife. That was good, too. You're not wrong. Matt in San Francisco says, you know, former Senator Rubio has a nice ring to it as well. Oh, I like that a lot. Senator-elect Demings sounds real nice. I like never gonna be a Senator J.D. Vance pretty good, too. And Herschel, by the way, is getting tired of being asked about Nitwit Nero, the Lord of Mar-a-Lardass. He had a little back and forth chit chat with black business leaders in Georgia and talked to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And a reporter asked him, well,
you know, the former president just last weekend, though, just a couple days ago, was up in North Carolina. If he comes to Georgia, you'll be standing next to him?
Oh, if he comes to Georgia, like I said, if he comes to do something for me, I'm fine with that. I'm still running for this office. I think people want to try to use Donald Trump and this and that. Herschel Walker is running for the Senate here in Georgia, not Donald Trump. I think everybody would like for Donald to be running, but he's not running. They'd like him to be running for the Senate. He can't run for the Senate. He's not here in Georgia. Herschel Walker is here in Georgia. I'm running for the Senate, and I'm going to win the Senate.
Yeah, so the question remains, if, say, MAGA Loco Mussolini comes to Georgia, and there are about 6 weeks left in the campaign cycle, there's a chance he might, to campaign for Hirsch. If he stands up there and says, yeah, well, you know, Herschel, you know, he sometimes sounds like maybe he's not so crazy about me, but hey, look, Herschel Walker's kissing my ass now, like he did with J.D. Hillbilly up in Ohio. Without saying anything that I really shouldn't say, you suppose Herschel will be okay with that, too? I mean, remember when Nitwit Nero said, and over here's my black for Trump. Remember that? Reckon Herschel'll be all right? Yeah, quit asking me about Donald Trump. He's not running, I'm running. On and on and on. And in addition to, and by the way, we are up again. We're almost into the third hour of the program. We need to raise $75 to meet Larry in Liberalville's challenge, which is a huge part of trying to not end this month in a deep, dark, and terrifying hole. $75, but no. In addition to having a hissy about Lizzo, well, the fetus fetishists are having a plum hemorrhage about something that Whoopi Goldberg said in regard to non-viable pregnancies. She sat down with Chris Cuomo, formerly of CNN, described by Fox News TV Radio Rwanda as disgraced former CNN anchor. Never saw Chris as having a lot of grace in the first place, but never mind. But Whoopi went after the Dobbs decision And she said, she talked about women being forced to carry dead fetuses inside of them because of our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties in D.C. And referred to how brutal it is, how sickening it is, how barbaric it is, all of which is true, that maggots and Republicans want to foist their religious views on people who don't even share them and force someone who is pregnant with a baby that is non-viable, that is, will not live outside the womb, carry it to term. And she referred to the non-viable fetus as a toxic thing. Oh, dear God, the fetus fetish has started hopping up and down and barking and grunting and hooting and braying and screaming and screeching. How dare her! Yeah. And, she said, I think it's negative that you changed a law that's 50 years old that you didn't do enough homework about to see what the consequences were going to be for women. She said, the fact that you didn't even have the courtesy to sit down with a doctor and say, what are the various things that this entails? Now we're trying to figure out what to do. If one is pregnant and one's baby dies in utero, the presence of that dead baby, that dead fetus, is in fact a toxic thing to the person carrying it. I don't want to get graphic. Let's just say it'll make the host very, very sick. And forcing someone against their will to carry a dead thing around inside them, well, another word for toxic is poisonous. Another word for toxic and poisonous is disease-causing. But some little, some creepy little editor at Fox News TV, in this case, Gabriel Hayes, caught that phrase toxic thing. Ooh, this'll get Emery and Marvelline real worked up there on their matching Barca loungers in the trailer at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club. I yearn for a day, and it may never come. I yearn for a day when all of these ugly little fuckers have been driven back behind the baseboards where they dwell. And people can simply live their lives without hearing these screeching morons. But you know what? The fact of the matter is, if we sat down and we started talking about the mechanisms necessary, and by mechanisms I mean legal changes and structural reforms necessary to stop this shit, it would probably not take a 3-hour program. It would probably take a week of 3-hour programs. Because these things are all creatures of legal structures that were designed to drive a wedge between the American people and their government. Were designed to pit brother against brother, sister against sister, etc., etc. Parent against child. Oh, God, we're into autumn now. That means Thanksgiving can't be far away. and people would begin to just dread what should be a beautiful holiday. Because they're going to have to sit down with old crazy Uncle MAGA, who'll be down at the end of the table shrieking about adrenochrome and Hillary wearing babies' faces to stay young. It was a long time ago that I coined the phrase Cold Civil War. And I have been proven more right than I ever dreamed or wanted to be. It is not necessary for families to be cloven asunder. These are choices that were made by conservatives because they didn't like the way that progress and the world were leaving their antediluvian notions behind. And this sort of breaking news Johns Hopkins doctor and Army doctor spouse charged with conspiring to give U.S. soldiers medical info to Russia? What? Anna Gabrielian and Jamie Lee Henry are charged with offering sensitive information to an undercover FBI agent who was posing as a representative of the Russian embassy. An indictment was released today charging an Army major at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which will soon be named for someone who wasn't a traitor, who had a secret security clearance, and his spouse, Anna Gabrielian, a Russian speaker who is affiliated with Johns Hopkins, and I'm having a hard selling U.S. soldiers medical info? What? Gabrielian interviewed in an August 17th meeting in a Baltimore hotel room, said she was motivated by patriotism toward Russia to provide any assistance she could to Russia, even if it meant being fired or going to jail, according to the indictment. She said she had reached out to the Russian embassy by email and phone, offering assistance from both her and her spouse, Henry, Major Henry. Oh, God, here it is. And fuck. So the indictment refers to Henry as male, but in 2015, Jamie Henry went public as the first openly transgender Army officer. God damn it! And Henry referred to himself as a male in interactions with the undercover FBI agent. Then Gabrielian gave the agent medical information about the spouse of a person employed by the Office of Naval Intelligence and highlighted a medical issue that Russia could exploit, according to the indictment. So when the shit hemorrhage begins on this, it won't be about a couple of fuck-ups. It'll be, the transes are disloyal to America. The two have been arrested. Spokesperson at Johns Hopkins said, "We were shocked to learn about this news this morning and intend to fully cooperate with investigators." They're facing a maximum sentence of 5 years in federal prison on the conspiracy charge and a maximum of 10 years in federal prison for each count of disclosing health information. What the eternal fuck? God damn it. Thanks, y'all. Innocent until proven guilty, but goddamn, thanks. I can't wait until testicle-toasting Tucky Carlson gets his verminous little mitts on this one. Stochastic terrorism will go through the goddamn roof. Honest to Pete. Sometimes it's just too damn much. On, we have a new ruling out from Judge Aileen Cannon, Nitwit Nero's personal judicial robe. She entered judgment in favor of Nitwit Nero. Going back to the story, Ralph says, I question this story. Were they approached by the FBI agent? Yeah, apparently so. And they set up a meeting in Baltimore with Gabrielian. And apparently she said that she was providing plausible deniability to her spouse, but her spouse really knew about it. And none of those details will matter worth a damn. Because, of course, they won't. But back to Aileen Cannon. She entered judgment, or entered a ruling, on the case management plan for Special Master Raymond Deary. Who, remember, the Department of Justice said, yeah, he's fine by us. And Raymond Deary, in turn, said, okay, y'all have got till September 30th, wait, that's tomorrow, to enter an attestation as to what was seized at Mar-a-Lago. But then Aileen Cannon overruled her own special master and said that the pettifoggers, who is this, counsel for the parking garage again, had to have a chance to review the seized documents, which may come to some 200,000 pages. So that pushes, that delays the case, which is exactly what Nitwit Nero wanted. And it's completely contrary. So he claims that his personal items were in there, but he has no idea what the personal items were. Well, it's time to take Aileen up to the 11th Circuit again and let him slap her back down again. And she pushed out the deadline for finalizing a document review vendor. I don't even know what that means. To October 5th, Raymond Deary said he hoped it would only take a day or two. And apparently her order was full of typographical errors. Former Mueller prosecutor Andrew Weissman said, "Oi, Judge Cannon tinkers badly with, and with typos, Judge Deary's scheduling order, relieving Trump of obligation to say whether docs were planted, even though she had wanted a clear inventory of what was found. She's such a disgrace." And Jessica Levinson, a Loyola law professor, said, well, it seems being slapped down herself by the 11th Circuit didn't make Judge Cannon any more circumspect. Marcy Wheeler, national security reporter, said, holy hell, this woman has no shame. Cannon is basically jumping up and down on a scale that her special master is supposed to still own. It is hilarious, corrupt, shameless, and obvious. I wonder, is anybody discussing Aileen Cannon during those floor speeches that members of the House or the Senate make in front of an empty chamber with nothing but the camera pointed at them? $200,000 documents. God damn it. You know, it's just slime and sleaze all the way down. Oh, and speaking of slime and sleaze, let's go to South Dakota, Stan, where Governor Kristi Noem, and not the good kind, I guess she thinks she's presidential tender and she likes the timber. And she likes the attention of the Republican boys. You know, just, yeah, whatever. She's been feted and applauded at CPAC and whatnot. And some of them tell her, you know, oh, you need to go for the 2024 presidential nomination. But her entire administration has been riddled with accusations of corruption. Now she's under investigation for, and you know, once upon a time a governor went to prison for this. She's under investigation for using South Dakota's state-owned aircraft for her own personal ends. Yeah, a governor did go to prison for doing that. His name was Guy Hunt. He was the first Republican elected governor of the state of Alabama in 100 years. And he was a preacher from Holly Pond, Alabama. And Governor Guy Hunt wound up getting busted because he used Alabama's state airplane, I think it was a Sopwith Camel, to zip around to tent revival meetings. Where he would, of course, preach the gospel. It was a different time. But apparently, according to Stephen Groves at the Associated Press, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem was returning from an official appearance in Rapid City in 2019 when she faced a decision. Overnight in the capital of Pierre, where another trip would start the next day, or head home and see her son attend his high school prom. Well, you know, she's a loving mama, so she used state fuel and the state aircraft to fly home and watch Junior go to a high school dance. And it cost the taxpayers of South Dakota $3,700 when the state airplane dropped her off close to her house and then came all the way back the next day to pick her up. Complaint went to the South Dakota Ethics Board. The Ethics Board punted and sent the case to the Division of Criminal Investigation, which I'm sure she probably has some degree of control over. According to the AP article, a county prosecutor overseeing the investigation, will decide whether the governor broke an untested law enacted by voters in 2006 to rein in questionable use of the state airplane. The governor has also faced action by the same ethics board for intervening in the state agency shortly after it moved to deny her daughter a real estate appraiser's license. Is she related to Arch Moore? Is there some school that they send Republican governors to to learn how to be even more corrupt than they might naturally be? Arch Moore was the most corrupt man ever to be governor of the state of West Virginia. He literally took sacks of cash. He shook down the coal industry for sacks of cash. Jesus. More from the AP article. Across the country, Democratic and Republican governors alike have come under scrutiny, both sides, for their use of state aircraft. New York, Kentucky, Minnesota, and Montana allow governors to do some politicking with the state-owned aircraft, but place some restrictions and require reimbursements for political use. New York also allows immediate family members to travel with the governor. That doesn't seem insane. That's also not quite the same as using the state-owned aircraft to divert to your hometown to watch your boy put on a pale blue polyester tuxedo with a ruffled front shirt and send him off to prom. Oh, well, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, right? And by the way, even though he's being all butch out there, white supremacist Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis got some bad news out of a recent poll. The poll was taken after he basically inveigled Venezuelan asylum seekers to fly away to Martha's Vineyard. The Political Matrix and the Listener Group polled Florida voters, and they found that after months in the lead, Monkey Up now trails Democratic nominee Crist by 6 entire points. And it looks like something along the lines of a 16-point shift in the polls. There's been a 4.5 shift in the national generic ballot, by the way, after the Dobbs decision. Based upon analysis by 538. Greg Fink, who is a conservative, what a name, a conservative-leaning strategic consultant for the Listener Group, according to this article from Newsweek, said he stands by his poll's results, and that it actually matches, oddly enough, I referred to this earlier, it matches with an ongoing decline in support for Monkey Up. It started when he attacked mask schools that continued with school boards that continued with mask mandates, flying in the face of his executive order banning masks in schools. And so he has continued to slide. Greg Fink said DeSantis was like 9 points ahead for like 3 points polls. All of a sudden, he just got behind and he hasn't come back from it. Good luck, Charlie Crist. And by the way, the article notes that the national Democrats have failed to pour money into Charlie Crist's campaign. While the Republican, National Republican Senatorial Committee, of all people, have begun funneling money and sending out begging emails supporting Monkey Up's kidnapping by inveiglement of Venezuelan asylum seekers. Well, from their mouths to God's ears. Oh, let's check in since it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. let's check in with Alex Jones. According to a report in the Houston Chronicle, Alex Jones is head of security. Had interactions with Jones's kid. And Jesus, the security chief then started pumping the kid about what his mama was up to, Jones's ex-wife, with whom Jones has been in a bitter divorce. That's just sleazy. The kid's 14 years old. The security guy takes the kid to and from school, took him on a hunting trip, and swapped memes with the kid that made fun of Alex Jones and other among the Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium denizens of InfoWars. The Chronicle said Kelly Jones reported the ex-Blackwater... Oh, great. Ex-Blackwater operative's behavior with her son to the Hays County Sheriff's Office in 2017. Emails shared by Kelly Jones show that a sergeant reviewed her report and recommended that she handle the matter civilly. The Chronicle did not receive comment from the Hays County Sheriff's Office in time for publication. And apparently Jones has been working with more than one former Blackwater operative and used that operative to track the activities of Kelly Jones as well. Sounds kind of stalky, doesn't it? Well, the trial in, what, Darien, Connecticut is still going on. And I guess it's a litigation strategy to be hateful and arrogant and confrontational with the still grieving parents of slaughtered children. And Christopher Mattei who represents the Sandy Hook families got sharp with Jones, and Jones then went full InfoWars paranoia.
Jones, I think you just told him to move on.
Just like all the Iraqis, but you liberals kill and love. It's just, you're unbelievable. You switch on emotions on and off when you want. It's just ambulance chasing.
Why don't you show a little respect?
Objection, Judge. I think that if you get what you give in this courtroom. Objection.
You have families in this courtroom here that lost children, sisters, wives, moms.
This is a struggle session. Are we in China? I've already said I'm sorry hundreds of times, and I'm done saying I'm sorry. I didn't progenerate this. I wasn't the first person to say it. American gun owners didn't like being blamed for this, as the left did, so we rejected it mentally and said it must not be true. But I legitimately thought it might have been staged, and I stand by that, and I don't apologize for it.
And don't apologize, Mr. Jones. Please don't apologize.
No, I've already apologized to the parents over
because
and over again.
Because we know you're
I don't apologize to you.
Objection.
Don't apologize
objection.
To you.
You're going
to
do it again.
Objection,
aren't
Judge.
Aren't you?
No,
objection.
Not.
Objection, argumentative.
Don't apologize
objection.
To you.
Well, it's hard for me to get a word in edgewise.
It is, but
because
I think there's client. One officer of the court and one witness or
witnessing
so,
the
court
and I can't.
I kind of feel bad for the jury that they got to sit through all this until the jury foreman can write down the number one and start writing zeros until his hand cramps, or her hand cramps, or their hand cramps. I legitimately thought Sandy Hook might have been staged, and I stand by that, and I don't apologize for it. China! Ron Philipkowski noting, he turned into Colonel Jessup today. Referring to a few good men. You can't handle the truth. Are we in China? What must that sleazy pettifogger representing? I mean, did they sit down and plan this? Nah, Alex. Just go ahead. Lose your shit. The jury's gonna, they'll feel sympathy for you getting beat up by the smart guy. Because you're definitely not the smart guy. Jesus. It's apparently argument time. And you could be forgiven for thinking maybe the maggots are on the ropes. The Texas Tribune had their Texas Tribune Festival not long back, and so Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, got on stage in a conversation to talk about what to do when freedom breaks out at places like Uvalde. And the audience was not down for listening to his obfuscation.
Whenever you have a mass murder, the political debate, you have Democrats in Washington who the step they immediately go to is we need to take away firearms from law-abiding citizens. Okay, you can clap for that, except for the minor problem that it doesn't work. If the objective is to stop these crimes, gun control is singularly ineffective. If you look across the country, the jurisdictions with the strictest gun control laws, almost without exception, have among the highest murder rates and among the highest crime rates. That when you disarm law-abiding citizens, the law-abiding citizens, by definition, abide the law and give up their weapons.
Problem is, that's not true. When we had an assault weapons ban in this country, crimes committed with assault weapons went down. And they went down well outside the statistical margin of error. They went arithmetically down. And if you have an assault weapons ban, and it's not even legal to sell the goddamn things, then they become very expensive on the black market. If you pass laws alongside them that saying the possession of the goddamn things is illegal, and, you know, you're going away for 15 or 20 hard federal time if you're caught with one, then the price of a black market assault rifle, just based on simple principles of supply and demand capitalism, y'all, goes way the hell up. And it's going to be hard for some disaffected little boy incel in his grandma's basement typing away at girls he's mad at because they won't give him online sexy time. Well, even if he's working two or three jobs, he's going to have a hard time coming up with the $15,000 for the assault rifle to go and shoot up the fourth graders. But this is lost on a genius like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. It's Waterbury, Darlene. The trial's going on in Waterbury. I don't know. But I saw Darien somewhere, but never mind. No, you're right. I'm not. Thank you for the correction. So, 41 seconds into this clip, and the anointed booger-eating future king of America, who, by the way, was much vaunted in his days at Harvard for being a master debater, is already losing. Going back to Alex Jones for a minute, Sumon says, Jackass Jones, may I suggest that the foreman in the Alex Jones case, instead of writing one followed by zeros, write nine followed by nines until their hand begins to cramp? I like the cut of your jib, Sumon. Yes, we will henceforward talk about writing nines and then lots more nines. Sumon is much better at mathematics than I am. Get back to Raphaelito. Oh, well, cowbell. Cowbell for the nines, Sumon.
The criminals don't. So, all right, let's talk about that. We had in place... We had in place for 10 years a so-called ban on so-called assault weapons. And the Department of Justice studied it because it expired and found that it had zero statistically significant impact on stopping violent crime. If you want to stop crime, let me tell you what actually works. And I've spent 10 years fighting for this. You target the bad guys. You target the criminals, the felons, the fugitives. You prosecute them. You put them in jail. You get them off the street. And you also enhance security at vulnerable targets. So I've introduced legislation repeatedly, and I'll tell you, 2 weeks ago, I stood on the Senate floor and tried to pass legislation I've introduced that would double the number of police officers in schools, that would fund $15 billion. Okay, look, if you want to have a reasonable conversation, we can. I mean, if you want to yell at each other, we can. But if you actually look at the legislation I introduced, would have spent $10 billion to fund 15,000 new mental health counselors in schools. Because if you look at the troubled young men who commit these horrific crimes, more mental health counselors there could help hopefully stop them and identify them before they commit these horrific acts. I stood up on the Senate floor to pass this legislation. The Democrats objected. Chris Murphy stood up, the leading Democrat for gun control, and objected and said, no, we shouldn't enhance school security. The Democrats' interest, if they're not taking away firearms from you, from law-abiding citizens, they have zero interest. And by the way, you ought to watch that debate. I would encourage you, like, go see. You can go watch it on go Google it and watch it. I stood up and laid out, if we want to keep our kids safe, and I desperately want to keep our kids safe, the most effective step we can do is have police officers there to protect them who can intercept a mass murderer before he gets into the school and stop them.
If he isn't running away.
You're right. It didn't happen. And why didn't it happen? Because when that lunatic got to the school in Uvalde, there wasn't a police officer on campus. He was able to get in an open back door. He got into the classroom and was murdering kids before the police got there. And if you want to stop him, look, if you have a solution to stop the deranged, evil murderer, I'd love to hear it. My solution is throw him in jail and stop the felons, the fugitives, those...
Yeah, throw him in jail after they've murdered the fourth graders. Curiously... And I don't understand. And I don't understand why a brilliant man like Raphaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, hangs on to a Civil War era law that allowed 18-year-olds to buy rifles, you know, to kill Yankees with, or uppity Negroes. Because history's, like Lizzo said, history's freaking cool when you can learn the actual thing. And all the counselors in the world, unless the kids are coming in for every kid is coming in for an hour session every week, are not going to stop this. Little fucker in Uvalde was out of school. So was the little fucker in Illinois. Just a white boy with enough money to buy an AR-15. The money it cost to buy an AR-15 would have bought him a pistol. Might have bought him several clips, but at some point he has to stop and reload. And he's not going to take out a dozen children. The AR-15 is the problem, the semi-automatic assault rifle that can be loaded for war. You know, we don't send our military into war anymore with Sergeant York's little Springfield rifle bolt action lick the sight at the end of the barrel, you know, to take away the haze. And, you know, 5 rounds per clip that you pop in. No. Those weapons are designed for war, so you don't have to reload nearly as often. And you can flick that little switch over to automatic and hose a place down if need be. And carry a lot of magazines. Well, the same magazines that real live, honest to God, no kidding soldiers carry into war are available for incel basement dweller white boys to purchase for their AR-15s when they decide to go and take their angst out on a bunch of fourth graders or people at a parade or Jews or people who have gone to a concert or people who have gone to a movie. Having weapons of war in a place where there is no war is inherently a matter of begging for war to arrive. And so, no, it's not just about taking guns away from law-abiding citizens. Rafaelito, you goddamn moron! Oh, wait, wrong day. You Thorn? Almost every white boy mass murderer is, until he squeezes the trigger for the first time, a law-abiding gun owner. He can't buy the firearm without being law-abiding. That whole thing happened, that whole conversation took place about 3 hours from Uvalde. And, of course, 18-year-olds can still buy AR-15s and sit there doom-scrolling through 4chan. And incel forums. And taking the red pill and taking the black pill. And getting angrier and angrier because they're nice guys and women and girls won't fuck them. And participating in posts talking about how about female anatomy. And how they don't get any sympathy and you know and they're lonely. And they need a hug. And then they go out and mostly online treat women like shit and then complain that they can't get a date. Well, son, you'll have to leave the basement to get the date. And, you know, where mental health is concerned, and our pal Nidia alluded to this, there is a crisis. There's a crisis of masculinity in this country. Because young guys are learning about sex by watching porn, which is anything but a typical and ordinary representation of sex. And then they go out and they think that that's what's going to happen for them. And they behave like the guys in the incel forums and the womanizer forums say they should behave, and women don't respond well to it. And then they doom, spiral, and the next thing you know, they're putting money on a counter in a goddamn gun store and say, I want that one, and I want about five more magazines, and I want a whole bunch of bullets. And the gun store owner says, well, that's perfectly normal. You only happen to fit the profile of people who shoot children in schools. Here, do you need a shoulder strap for it? You know, we got some bandoleros here where you can put your loaded magazines in, and they go across your chest, and they lift and they separate. I mean, but Raffaellito can't talk about any of that. Yeah, Ron. Ron and Raleigh picking up on it right quick. Now, wait a damn minute, Ron says. So all the mass murderers were criminals that could be stopped before they went on a killing spree. None of these fuckers became a criminal until after they shot up a bunch of folks. Fuck Ted Cruz, that lying shit stick. I do not find anything to argue with you about in that regard. But as if that wasn't bad enough, and we'll finish the clip.
Mental illness, stop them before they commit these crimes. There are some we won't know about beforehand, and the single best step to stop them is have armed officers on campus that can stop them before they kill our kids. But look, instead, you guys can instead sing Kumbaya with them and hope they'll just stop. But
you heartless motherfucker. Nobody's talking about singing Kumbaya. But what do you do when incel boy comes along, whips out the AR-15, pumps a few rounds into the cop, or the next cop, or the next cop? Because essentially, Raffaellito is taught, and how safe are children going to feel walking around in an armed camp? All that does is normalize fascism. Doesn't make you feel safe. That's just a whole bunch of people with guns, and you know, cops go nuts too. I mean, the very idea that we're that maggots are terrified of a child assumed female at birth wanting to be called he, but they're okay with a school full of guns. I'm kind of at a loss. I can't figure him out. And then there was more.
So when you think of gun control, there are lots of folks on the left that say, look, let's just get rid of all the... What that would mean is 500,000 to a million more people are victims of crime, are victims of rape, of murder, and assault. And in Sutherland Springs in particular, let me tell you the story of Stephen Williford. So Stephen Williford... Okay, good. Let me address the AR-15. So Stephen Williford lives a block away from Sutherland Springs. He's a plumber. He's in his 60s. He was at home. He was not a member of the church. He was at home in the morning of the shooting. He heard about his daughter came in and said some crazy guy is shooting up the church. Stephen Williford ran to his garage. He opened up his gun safe. He got out his gun. It was an AR-15. Stephen Williford ran down to the church. He actually ran barefoot. He didn't bother to put his shoes on. He ran barefoot to the church. He got behind a truck. He yelled out.
Barefoot, just like Jesus.
People. He yelled out. The murderer stopped. He was in the process of just executing children. He stopped. He came out. And he began shooting at Stephen Williford. Stephen Williford began shooting back. The murderer was wearing body armor. Stephen Williford is an NRA rifle instructor. He put two rounds in the murderer, one in his side, one in his leg. He stopped the murderer from killing more people. The murderer fled and ultimately died as a result of that gunshot. The weapon that Stephen used to stop that was an AR-15. And in these debates, look, if we sit down.
Now, hold on. The guy's an NRA instructor. He's got an AR-15, a weapon of war, and he hits the guy in the side and the leg. I thought all these NRA sons of bitches were about center mass, goddammit, center mass. Well, that was where his body armor was. He had to shoot him in the leg and the side. Yeah. But what were those numbers a minute ago? If you take away everybody's guns.
So, when you think of gun control, there are lots of folks on the left that say, look, let's just get rid of all the... What that would mean is 500,000 to 1 million more people are victims of crime, are victims of rape, of murder, and assault. And
yeah, and the victims of rape won't be able to get a goddamn abortion because those are worse than taking away... Oh, Jesus. These fuckers. Sorry, I've gotten a little salty toward the end of the program. There are not 500,000 to 1 million crimes that are stopped every year because some gun humper has a gun. In fact, the number of times that the guy in Sunderland Springs, that scenario, or any other scenario in which having a gun stops another guy with a gun, the number of times that happens is actually minuscule, statistically and actually minuscule. And then there are the folks at the Episcopal Church in Birmingham that we talked about a few months ago, where they took the shooter down with a folding chair. Folding chairs for everybody. Where's your folding chair bill in the Senate, Raffaelito? Fucking hyper-educated moron. Something wrong. There's something wrong with Harvard. But this guy actually wants people to believe that there are 500,000 to 1 million crimes that are prevented every year because some gun humper had a weapon.
Look, if we sit down reasonably and say, how can we stop crimes, you would rationally say, well, let's look at both the criminal uses of firearms, but also the defensive uses of firearms that stop crimes, that...
That is
the only thing that does. If you look at violence doesn't solve violence, look, that's actually why the left wants to abolish the police, and it's why you see murder rates skyrocketing.
All right.
Yeah, violence is the only thing that stops violence. Yeah, that's why when people were marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, and the Alabama State Police turned attack dogs on peaceful protesters. Well, that's why the peaceful protesters then turned around. I mean, it was the early 1960s, so what they had Thompson submachine guns with 45 caliber rounds and the drum magazines. And they mowed down the state police and all the goddamn German shepherds. But, you know, come Martin Luther King Jr. holiday the next January, Raffaelito will be standing there somewhere saying, Dr. King told us that we had to have to judge people on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. I mean, who believes that crap? You know what? Violence does beget violence. And that's what the NRA has wanted all along. They want a country faced off against one another. In which violence is the norm. And by God, they have gotten their way. They have damn sure gotten their way. And here we are. And people who don't give a good goddamn about living children but get all worked up about a lump of tissue inside a host body will argue that it's more important for some pasty-faced, doughy member of Meal Team 6 to have an AR-15 than for a 7-year-old to be able to become an 8-year-old, and I despise every last one of them. So let's call it an evening, shall we? Great way to end it, I guess. Thank you so much, Ralphs, for jumping in and taking out the first $25 of Larry and Liberalville's $100 challenge. Thank you. Thank you so much. I hope maybe the overnight crew can maybe provide the other $75. And we'll meet that. And maybe we've got a fighting chance to end September and keep this program alive through October. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you're mistaken, says Ron and Raleigh. MLK would have been a Republican. He was at one point. But I never heard him encouraging anybody to shoot back at the cops or Bull Connor or kill the guys with the water hoses or the dogs. Because he understood that violence begets violence, especially in an imbalanced power dynamic. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve, this evening in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Just keep the stream going until Malloy comes on. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, the folks of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. I gotta get mine before I get a hit out of here to Alabama. Get your booster. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Wear your masks when you're among the great maggot unwashed. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet. Like Paul from Parts Unknown says, and of course, if some guy with a creepy beard comes towards you saying, violence is the only thing that stops violence. Well, avoid Raffaelito like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.